What's going on, y'all? And welcome back to Double M Live. We are back, baby. Episode 2 of Season 7.
We moving. Like I said, we bringing content y'all way all season long. Make sure you stay locked. Please like, share, and subscribe. Everything we got going on. But yeah, it's good to be back again, man. Yeah, it's good to be back.
I'm glad, man. Shout out to everyone who watched the return of the premiere episode of Season 7. A lot of great feedback. It felt good to be back with the gang, back with Cool Sam. Shout out to Tex, who's here with us right now producing the episode. It's just good, man. It's good to be podcasting again.
Yeah, that episode definitely got a lot of love in terms of, you know, first of all, being back after so long. And then that segment, we got a little, you know, sentimental. You know, talked about our views and our faith a little bit. I think a lot of people enjoyed that conversation. A lot of people reached out and said, man, they needed to hear that. It's a good reminder for themselves to help them in, you know, whatever their situation and circumstances are. So it felt good to just be back as a whole, but it felt good to have that conversation that we did and have it impact people. You know, I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, so if you haven't seen it, like Mike said, you can catch us everywhere. YouTube, all forms of podcasts, we are there. So make sure, you know, come back in it with Double M. I haven't said this in a while, Mike, and I'm so glad I get to say this again. Yo, Mike Nice, what's on the menu today?
Wow, haven't heard that in a while. Huh? Yes, it is. Today, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the Celtics in the upcoming season. You know, if you're a big Celtics fan, NBA fan, you know, training camp, media day, those things right around the corner. By the time this episode drops, you know, might be a week or two away or whatnot, but we're definitely going to talk some Celtics, you know, being Celtics fans ourselves. And a big question with the Celtics, obviously the season might not be what we want it to be, but the superstar, Jason Tatum, Achilles injury, is he really out for the whole season? Let's discuss. We're going to discuss. We'll also talk about the big boxing match that recently took place between Canelo Alvarez and Terrence Crawford. What did that fight mean to the boxing world? What did the outcomes mean to both Canelo and Crawford? We're going to have that discussion as well, because I definitely have some interesting thoughts. I know Marv does as well. And then, America the Beautiful. America the Beautiful, huh? Jimmy Kimmel recently got what they would say these days, canceled.
Benched.
Jimmy Kimmel is no longer on the air due to some controversial comments that he possibly have made. And, you know, we're going to have that discussion as well, just to things to go along with what happened to Jimmy Kimmel, why he is no longer on the air. But, yeah, that's on the menu today, Marv. I'm excited to get into these conversations and you know, get the comments rolling once people watch this. It's going to be a good one, per usual.
Yes, sir, man. You forgot the last movie you watched.
Excuse me. We're going to have a conversation about the biggest movie in the world right now, Demon Slayer. And your boy got a chance to watch Demon Slayer. And you might hear, maybe not for me. Maybe not for me, per se. But the fellas will have a conversation about Demon Slayer, because what you just said recently before we got on air, it broke the record for...
Yeah, anime since Pokemon.
Pokemon. That's huge, because I know a little bit about Pokemon, but I knew Pokemon took over the world. And you saying this Demon Slayer...
But you know about Pokemon.
Yeah, you know it's hard to get that Charizard Pokemon card.
Shut the hell out, bro.
It's hard to get that Charizard Pokemon card.
Mike don't know shit about no Pokemon.
I had Pokemon cards back in the day, bro. Me and the kids in the neighborhood used to throw them on the hood of the car and act like we was battling something. But Demon Slayer, you know, big movie. The fellas will get a chance to talk about that as well for those who are interested. You know, it's going to be a good episode, good menu. You know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that for everybody.
I love it, man. So let's get right to it with the Boston Celtics. Like you said, you brought it up to me. You text me like, yeah, and obviously when we're talking about the show, you said we got to talk Celtics. My mind is still summertime. So I'm like, Celtics, what? Did something happen? I was like, yo, training camp in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, I gotta lock in, man. Celtics, the NBA season is really right around the corner
you're
here.
You're not locked in. You know why you're not locked in?
Why am I not?
Because we all know the team's going to be mid this year. That's why you're not locked in. You could be honest.
This time last year, I probably have a little more focus into the season. There's a little air that's let out the balloon with this season. But there's some excitement as well. You know, you get to see some young up-and-coming stars come into the season. You're going to have to familiarize yourselves with some new players, some roster players. They're bringing in all the G-star athletes into the Celtics here. So we're going to have to learn some new names. Kind of like the Patriots right now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people on the team you don't really know. You got to learn some new names and really familiarize yourselves with. So that's what we're getting into. But let's talk about the guys we do know.
Yeah, the returning players. You know, guys that probably will be in the starting lineup. You know, first and foremost, Jaylen Brown.
JB.
He's coming back. You know, he's had an interest this summer. He's been out and about doing everything. Guys got into streaming now. He want to be a big streamer and whatnot.
They said he wasn't marketable, and he said, watch this.
He said, watch this. And you know, he's been everywhere, doing a little bit of this, that, promoting his, you know, his clothing line, his shoe line and whatnot, joining different streams and whatnot. You know, being out in the city constantly, you know, Jaylen Brown has really put his face out there for everybody to see. But aside from that, with the season coming around, this season for sure, he's the face of the Boston Celtics. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. You know, the team essentially is going to be ran through him. And then you got a couple of pieces around him that, you know, hopefully can.
So let's stick with JB. Let's talk about JB for a little bit before we move forward. What are you really expecting out of JB this season? Because in my mind, I can see it going two ways, right? And it could be, all right, JB, this is your team. Go prove the world. Yes, you shouldn't have nothing to prove, right? You're the Finals MVP.
Mm-hmm.
But we know when it comes to JB, how people look at him as Robin, really, and he's had his struggles throughout the playoffs. So JB could take this year and go, all right, I'm going to be averaging 26, 5-5, and really, you know, try to keep this Boston Celtics team afloat. It could go that way. There's another way it could also go, which I don't think it will, but it's very possible. Celtics can start struggling with JB on the team, and they say, you know, JB, take a rest day. Don't play this week. Take a rest day here. And then you don't get to see JB in his full capacity, because the Celtics are understanding that this team ain't it. Mm-hmm. And let's just, you know, try to upgrade all these young guys. So when Tatum and you get the full cohort in, you hit the ground running next year. It could go those two ways, in my opinion. What are your thoughts?
I'm honestly looking at both of those different lanes that the team could take, that JB could take. And I'm honestly not mad at either one. Because if he takes the route of, listen, this is me, it's my team, let me go average, you know, 26 or 27, whatever the case may be, have an all-star season, have a possible all-NBA season. If he goes out and does that, you know, obviously Celtics fans are going to be loving that for sure, but just in terms of the NBA world, I think it'll push him into another level. You know, obviously, he'll still be under Tatum, in a sense.
He'll get a lot of respect.
But he'll get a lot more respect. I mean, he gets a lot of respect now, but if he goes out next year and has an all-NBA season, all-star, you know, the sky's the limit in a sense with the freedom that he has. Mm-hmm. He balled the right way. He could be a starter on an all-star team, and that's wild to think about, but, you know, the opportunity is there for him. If it was the reverse situation and Tatum was, you know, hurt, well, Tatum continues to get, you know, all-star selection and whatnot, but now we're looking at a season where if it was JB out, maybe Tatum averages 30 again,
yeah,
like he's done before with JB there. JB has the opportunity to really get a lot more respect this season playing at a really high level with this opportunity. On the other side of it, if the team is struggling and they want to sit him because, you know, they know that they're not going anywhere, and in their mind, in Brad Stevens' mind, an organization, they're trying to gear up for 26-27, not 25-26, 26-27. And if they feel like the team is not even getting close to knocking on the door of playoffs or being real contenders, sit JB. He's already established. You know what he can bring to the table, and you know that this team is not it. If you need to sit him, get him some rest. You know, JB has sometimes been a little injury prone, to be honest, where he's missed some games for little nicks and different things here and there. Why run him into the ground with a team that is probably not going to make it out the first round or is probably struggling to be a playing team? There's no need for that. You are, whether JB is fully healthy or not, knowing what it is and knowing the type of roster they put together, you know that you're gearing up for next season. next offseason, where I believe, I trust and believe that Brad Stevens is planning to make different splashes to bring another title-contending team together. There's no need to run JB into the ground. Do I want to see him have an All-NBA All-Star season? Absolutely, without a doubt. But at the same time, listen, have him fresh and ready to go to get the greatest tag team in the NBA back together again with Tatum and Brown, hopefully ready to make another run at a championship in 26-27.
I think with JB's mentality as well, is he's one where, you know, he talks a lot about, oh, I have to do a lot of sacrifices that a lot of people don't see in the NBA. He says that a lot. Ain't nothing to sacrifice this year.
No.
You ain't got nothing to sacrifice. No. Your running mate is Derek White, who's the most selfless player in the NBA. There's nothing to sacrifice. So whatever he's been talking about, this is his opportunity to prove it. And the way JB's built, we've seen that he rises to these occasions, or he looks forward. I should probably say he looks forward to these situations, where I'm excited to see how he hits the ground running. He looks like JB. We know he's always going to come in great shape. He did have that knee injury
early in offseason.
But I think I've seen him now. He's been working out and everything of that nature. He's out here freaking racing speed in Boston. So he should be smooth to go into. I bring up his running mate, Derek White. He's been so close to making All-Stars. Real close to making All-Star. And due to the fact, because the team was so nice.
Yeah.
And he contributed. Can this be a year where D. White makes an All-Star team?
He definitely has a shot at being an All-Star reserve. What he did last year had him knocking at the door to being on the All-Star team. But again, you know, too many people ahead of him on the Celtics. And then, you know, other players in the league. But he should definitely have an upkick in production this year in terms of scoring. You know, maybe he's going to play more minutes.
That dude had the green light already.
And his usage rate is going to go even higher because he's essentially the number two option now on the team. So he has an amazing opportunity to be selected for an All-Star team. You know, him and Brown, that's the 1-2 punch. That is literally the 1-2 punch of the Celtics. I know people, Pritchard might elevate after a six-man year. You know, Anthony Simons, if he sticks around, might be, you know, of solid value to the team. But I think most people have the understanding that the team is going to go through White and Brown. So, you know, I could see Derek White, you know, possibly being in the running for an All-Star reserve spot. Because it's there for the taking, to be honest.
I think White, obviously we know White can score. And if he only bumps up his score to maybe 19 points again, 20 points.
I'm not mad.
Well, I want to see White become more of a facilitator this year. He's the de facto point guard of the team, whether you have Pritchard or Simons, whatever. He's the de facto point guard. So I want to see White now take his game to a level where he's making it easier for JB. He's going to be setting up the guards to score. You still have Sam Hauser and all of these dudes that are on the team. So what can White do to improve his game? The guy can shoot lights out. He became a lights out shooter. So let's now bring that level of being a point guard into this team that this team desperately needs. Obviously, we have the bigs that are going to be an issue. This team desperately needs someone to set the tone, especially because, unfortunately, JB is going to be handling the ball a lot.
Oh, boy.
And I say unfortunate with all due respect, but the man struggles when it comes to dribbling the ball. He's gotten better. Obviously, he could facilitate here and there. It makes it easier when you have a full cohort and an All-Star team. Now, all eyes and all directions are on Jaylen Brown. The game plan when you face the Celtics is just stop Jaylen Brown from scoring. How do you do that? You're going to send that. It's going to be the first time JB's going to see a lot of doubles. You're going to see a lot of people trying to shut him down in the corner. How is he going to handle that? He turns the ball over a lot. His assist-to-turnover ratio is one of the worst in the league. So that's why I really need Derek White to take his game to the next level to become a facilitator.
Yeah, the ball needs to be in Derek White's hand the majority of the time. I know Pritchard is probably going to be in the starting lineup as the point guard, but I think Derek White really needs to be the one controlling the ball the majority of the time. Obviously, Pritchard can, you know, handle the ball as well, better than Jaylen Brown, But I think it all needs to start with Derek White. And I agree with you. Him becoming a better facilitator is going to open up things a lot for JB, first and foremost, but just for the other players who obviously have to contribute. You know, can't just be Jaylen Brown scoring and Derek White and Pritchard hitting some outside shots. You're going to need some of these other guys to step up if you want to be a contending team or just, you know, have some solid battles each and every night that you have a game. But Derek White, you know, expanding his game as a facilitator is going to be massive for the success of the Celtics this season.
And I know I derailed the conversation a little bit, but there's a reason why you wanted to talk to Celtics, bro.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you wanted to bring this up. So I'm going to let you take the floor here, and let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously... obviously, everyone knows Jason Tatum is, you know, dealing with the Achilles injury, you know, but if you pay attention to social media, his social media, just different things, he's out and about. He's moving. He's been to Patriots practice. I've seen him at a couple different weddings. He's been dancing at weddings. He's out golfing. He's out at, you know, community, no books, no ball, doing different things. He's been moving. And I think earlier in the offseason, he was moving. And sometimes you see him still walking around with the boot. I feel like now you don't even see him with the boot anymore. So people are seeing that and obviously not trying to jump to crazy conclusions or make crazy assumptions, but like, yo, what's his recovery like? Because this guy's out and about moving. Have we seen him playing basketball or running up and down? No, we have not. But, you know, from everything you always hear about an Achilles injury, oh, man, it's the worst injury, the recovery, and just everything that goes into it. Tatum is mobile. Not running, like I said, that we've seen, but he's mobile. And a clip that came up recently when I was scrolling on social media, it was a couple, you know, sports hosts on the show talking about, is it possible Tatum makes return post-All-Star break? He got his injury, you know, in the playoffs. Surgery the next day. He's taking some time. Then he had surgery. I don't even know if it was 24 hours after he tore his Achilles.
Which is crazy.
Which is wild. You know, you don't really see that happen too often when you have surgery that quick after the injury happens. And we're talking, we're maybe 4 months, 3-4 months removed from that injury, something like that. And I think with people seeing him being so mobile and whatnot in the community, it has people thinking. So obviously, you want his recovery to go well. Nobody wants Tatum returning to the court if he's not 100%. And knowing Tatum and just understanding his work ethic and whatnot that we've seen over the years, this is the guy that's going to put in work to try to get back as soon as he can. He already seems like, you know, prior to his injury, Tatum's pretty much an Ironman. He doesn't miss games. You know, he doesn't sit. He's had a little wrist and different that, but Tatum doesn't sit too many games.
So what do you think, man? Is he going to play?
I feel like
Let me phrase it better. Should he play?
If the Celtics by March are in a position to hold down a top three spot in the East, top three spot, okay, you know, secure home court advantage and possibly the first and second round, if Tatum is in a space where he can play basketball, bring Tatum back. Now, with the supporting cast they have around Tatum and Brown, it's tough. Because even if Tatum comes back, I still don't see them being championship contenders. But, you know, why not give Tatum a chance to play every other day? Little minutes restriction. He doesn't want to sit. And if Tatum's healthy, yeah, he's going to say the regular, I'm going to listen to the doctors, this and that. But Tatum does not like to sit out games if he know he can go. If the Celtics earn a chance to contend slightly, and he's close to being 100% or at 100%, and now you're just saying, well, we're just going to hold on and wait till 26, 27 season. Nah. If it's possible, let him run a little bit. The guy's 27 years old. You're not dealing with the Dan Lillard who's dealing with an Achilles injury. He's about 35.
Come on, bro.
Sorry. Jesus. My fault, Dane. But you're dealing with a younger guy in this modern day and age where the technology and the recovery, Tatum gonna come back, the Achilles made out of titanium or something, vibranium. Who knows? But I'm saying,
we'll watch this Demon Slayer one time. Jesus.
If it's possible, I would say I wouldn't be upset if Tatum got a run a little bit if he's fully healthy and ready to go.
When the injury first happened, I said, I don't care what it is, don't have him play next year. This is your superstar, your franchise. They just don't fall out of nowhere.
You want
to bubble wrap him and make sure that he's good to go for the 26-27 season. But last night, knowing that we was going to talk about this, mulled it over, started really thinking about it and such. And funny, I had the month of March in my mind as well. And the reason why I'm leaning towards more of having him play, regardless of what seed the Celtics are in, I'm thinking of Paul George. And we all remember 2014 or so when Paul George broke his leg. And this, you want to talk about a remarkable recovery? No one talks about Paul George's recovery. That joint was crazy. This dude's leg snapped in front of the world. And he came back and played the end of the year.
And he came back the following season
It was crazy. He wasn't great, obviously. Mm-hmm. He was coming back. But I think that was so good for him where he played. He was averaging maybe 12 points a game.
I do remember this.
20 minutes. But it was at the end of the year, whatever. No one remembers it. But the following year, Paul George was back. Obviously, he wasn't the super athletic dude doing the 360 dunks that I remember Paul George was. But he was back being an all-star caliber player. And now we know, you know, he's had a long career after his injury, had a lot of success afterwards. And I think about him returning at the end of the year that no one really thinks about because the Pacers weren't anything that year without him. But he would play every other day or something like you were just mentioning. And he averaged little points, but he was getting his rhythm back. Slowly but surely, he was getting his rhythm and getting to play. And I'd rather Tatum get his rhythm back in March than in September when you're trying to hit the ground running for a championship run. So after thinking about it, mulling it over, I'm leaning towards having Tatum. If the doctors clear it, he's good to go. Tell him a little soft sometimes. So, you know, make sure he's 100% ready to go. And I think Brad Stevens is no dummy. He would never put Tatum in no type of harm's way whatsoever. If he's ready to go by March, sure. I don't know if I want him coming in April playoff time. That's a different animal. But March, if he's able to really just get a couple games in his body and such, I'm for it.
That Paul George example is huge. And I completely forgot about that. Because like you said, no one remembers that he came back at the end of the season. He averaged like 12, 14 points. He wasn't doing anything crazy. But you throw him in that game speed just to get that feel again. Not every day, not every minute, but just to throw him back in the game speed just so he can get his legs underneath of him again and be in that NBA action. And then attack the following offseason.
Yeah, the whole offseason.
So that training camp, you there day one. Preseason, you know, whether they play him or not, he's there. And then opening night, you there ready to go. But you're not stepping on the court like, it's my first game. And nah, you played last year. You already got some of the feeling, but it's just a brand new season.
It's not that pressure either, right?
Very true.
You're starting off what is Tatum going to look like? What is he going to do? Is he going to be...
You've already been kind of thrown in the fire a little bit. Obviously, with a new season, the only real conversation is, can Tatum return to his former self? But it's not going to be, what does Tatum look like in his first game action? No, you saw that at the end of the 25-26 season. So you just want to see if Tatum can regain his full form after a whole offseason training camp, all of that. You know, I'm leaning towards it. And again, depending on where the Celtics are in seeding and the standings and whatnot, that may play a part into it. But again, if fully healthy, if cleared by the doctors, and if you got the green light from Brad Stevens and everything, I wouldn't mind seeing Tatum 20 minutes and just support role and just get his legs back underneath him. Like I said, he's still young enough where you still expect a long career from, similar to Paul George's time. I believe he might have been around the same age as Tatum. Maybe a little younger, but still a long career ahead of him, and it wouldn't hurt to get Tatum back in the fold a little bit, and then, like I said before, gear up for a hopefully big 26-27 season.
And so this is Double M Live, man. We'll be right back with more on the menu. And we're back, Mike Nice. What's next on the menu?
Let's talk a little bit about the biggest boxing match to take place in a lot of years. Never seen a match this big. And I don't count these Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson's, Logan Paul, Jake Paul. I don't count those. I'm talking about real boxers going at it. And in the sport of boxing, you know, you always want to see the best go at the best.
Yeah.
And that's something that we got, you know, a couple weekends ago where Terrence Crawford took on Canelo Alvarez in probably the biggest match since Pacquiao Mayweather, probably. Like, I can't think of a bigger match in recent years than the one that we just had. And, you know, going into the fight, I kept thinking to myself, you know, who had what to gain, what to lose. And even, you know, before we recorded this, thinking about, you know, this topic, I was saying to myself, if Canelo beat Crawford, I don't think he had much to gain from it. Because Canelo was already probably the biggest name in boxing, the face of boxing. If he beat Crawford, it would have been like, okay, you know, he took out another fighter. Yeah, great fighter. Crawford's a great fighter. You know, gave Crawford his first loss. But I don't think it would have done much for Crawford. For Canelo. It wouldn't have done much for Canelo. If Crawford lost, you know, Crawford would have still been known as a great fighter, but dad, he got a chance to step up to a big Canelo and he couldn't get the job done, but he's still a great fighter. He would have kind of stayed, you know, mid-level in terms of boxers, great boxers that we've seen. Look at the opposite side of things and the actual outcome. Crawford winning that fight took him to another level. Saw a post on Instagram or something, or Bleacher Report somewhere. Crawford, Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard or something, Mayweather, like, he's now in that category of dudes. First person, first boxer to be undisputed in four different weight classes. Like, it took Crawford to the next level. Canelo, he lost a big fight, but I don't think Canelo loses that much of, you know, the popularity and whatnot. He's already established. He's a made man. You know, he got $100 just to show up for the fight. $100 million. He got $100 million just to sign his name on a dotted line for the fight. And I think Crawford only got $10 million for the fight. So Canelo was already a made man. But with Crawford winning that fight, it took him to another level of, like, this is one of the greatest of all time. He's now officially in that Mayweather, that Ali, that, you know, Tyson. He's in that category of boxers now. Like, he was already an undefeated fighter. You know, he's had a great career. He's, what, 37, 38 years old? So he's already established. But you beat Canelo Alvarez, the face of boxing. Now you up there on some people's possible Mount Rushmores, if you want to get into that conversation. I'm proud of what Crawford was able to accomplish with that win over Canelo.
Yeah, you have a couple points I want to touch on. Wow. First, with the who had more and less to gain, I definitely agree. Crawford had more to gain, obviously. When you're the underdog of a fight, you're always going to have more to gain. What I disagree a little bit is Canelo beating Crawford short term might have not had as much of an impact, but long term, when you later down the line, when you start to look back at Canelo's career, then you start looking at the names he defeated, and then you, at the end of his career, you see that he defeated Terrence Crawford. You're gonna look back and be like, "Yo, are we right on where we really placed Canelo? Canelo's ran this boxing world for the past 15 years.
Yeah.
Everything's been through Canelo. When he faced Mayweather at the age of, what, 23 years old, he already had 30 bouts in his name. The kid is, he's a monster. And I think long-term-wise, when we start to look back at the career, we're going to look at Canelo and how many boxing matches he had and who he had to face and be like, oh, okay, nah, this guy's one of the greatest. And we're still gonna say that with him regardless. So, like I said, I agree with Crawford gained so much. I didn't have Crawford winning the fight, and I feel ashamed for it. Obviously, I was rooting for Crawford. That was my out. I'm rooting for the guy. I just don't know if he was going to win because of the weight difference. And he proved me wrong. It had nothing to do with that. He would just outbox Canelo throughout it. Then you had another point that you just mentioned that I wanted to to touch on. Oh, when it was about Crawford. You mentioned Crawford.
The weight classes?
No, not the weight class. You said that he needed this Canelo win to now be looked at in the Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
That is, I believe, that's 100% right. It's like the purest of boxing fans or boxing analysts knew Crawford was that guy.
Yes.
Pound for pound, he was always, everyone knew he was that guy. But he was never going to get that until he beat a guy like Canelo, right? It reminds me of like a Michael Jordan. For the 7 years, everyone knew Michael Jordan was the best basketball player in the world. They knew he was better than Larry Bird. They knew he was better than Magic Johnson. But they could never put him there until he could get that ring.
Mm-hmm.
He got that ring after the 7 years, and it was like, all right, he's arrived. This is his league. This is everything about him. The purists knew this is a monster right here.
Yeah.
But until he can't get over the hump, we can't put him there. I feel like it's kind of like that if you, related to Crawford. Everyone knows Crawford's a force, bro.
Yes,
when you watch him box, he's taking everyone down.
Yes.
But he just never had those big names where everyone was watching to solidify him, and now he got solidified with that fight. And I'm super, super proud, super happy I got to witness that. And I don't think we're going to get another boxing match like that for another 10 years down the line, because we got to develop all of these guys to get there. So it's going to... This was one of those ones, and I'm glad I was able to watch it live.
Do they book a rematch? Should they book a rematch?
They can. I don't think it'll do anything. There's some rematches that'll do that, like, oh my God, we want to see a trilogy or anything like that. I don't see that with this fight. I think this fight was really cemented to see who can be the best out of those two at the time. You know, at that time, it's not like they're 31, 32, where they have a lot of fights left in their careers to really continue on. This was like, it seemed like a nice chapter for both of them to close out.
You don't mind it being a one-off fight?
I don't mind.
At their age, for sure. Because even after the fight, you know, Crawford's getting the question of, you know, is this your last fight? And he's only getting that question because, again, he's, 38 years old. That and the other fact that, He whooped Canelo's ass. It was a unanimous decision for the victory for Crawford. If it wasn't a split decision, maybe that brings a little bit more conversation. But the fact that it was unanimous for Crawford, and if you watch the fight, the way he dismantled Canelo, you know, the question of a rematch, maybe not there. Only reason why I maybe think possible rematch is because, again, Canelo got 100 mil just to show up, and I think Crawford got 10. On the other side of it now, Crawford holds all the chips.
Crawford could be like,
I want that, and they'll close out. Now, you could take that match, and then maybe you don't attack it the same way you did, and then you lose, and it a lot of things can branch out for that. But I kind of agree, if Crawford wants to end it here, he took out Canelo, he's 38 years old, he's undefeated, he got all the belts in these different weight classes. If Crawford wants to shut it down here, I wouldn't be mad at that. If he wants a rematch, best believe, we all going to pull up to watch it. But I also think, like you said, it might not do much in terms of having, you know, the main event attraction. It'll be a main event, but not the attraction like the first fight had.
Yeah. But I think both of them should go the WWE route. And when I say that is, they're done. They're solidified.
Yeah.
They're great. Your next fights, I still think they have enough within them. Their next fight should really try to bring in the younger guys in. You know, fight. There's some young up-and-coming talent that no one knows about. They both have names. If they can get a couple pay-per-view fights within the boxing with some young up-and-coming talent there to, you know, really boost the sport up, because the sport's dying. We're going to have Gervonta Davis and Jake Paul next. Or something. Like, the sport is dying. So if those two dudes can, you know, fight some younger guys in the division that are really dangerous. Because whether they win or lose now, it's already
solidified.
It's solidified. Like, who said it? Mayweather ruined boxing, right? Because everyone's searching for the undefeated mark.
Yeah.
I think it was Jim Gray. Mayweather ruined boxing because everyone's looking for the... And boxing was never about that. It was never about being undefeated. It was just about winning.
Yeah.
Winning the fight or being the best or fighting the best.
Mm-hmm.
When Mayweather came in, he branded his undefeated mark, which... are good for him.
Yeah.
But because he branded that, that's what everyone's chasing, and no one wants to be boxing the best. So I hope these dudes at the end of their career fight some young talent and move forward from there.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what direction Canelo Crawford goes from here. Either way, they brought excitement back to boxing for one night, and that's all you can really ask for in a sport that, like you kind of said, doesn't have the modest excitement that it used to, with the best not getting a chance to fight the best too often. But that was a big one for sure, and it was a show from start to finish, all 15 rounds, I believe it went.
Netflix, listen. 1 o'clock in the morning for a boxing fight is nasty work.
Yeah.
Netflix, yeah. Bro. I watched Demon Slayer. That movie 5 hours long. I came home and the main event still didn't start. I couldn't believe it, bro. I thought I timed it perfectly.
I get it. It's on the West Coast. There ain't no other big arenas in the country other than Las Vegas.
Bro, 1 a.m.?
Why don't they fight at Madison Square Garden? Why don't they fight? There's no big arenas in Florida. Like, why everything got to be in Mandalay Arena and something in Las Vegas? Why everything got to be over there?
That's where the money's at, man.
I guess. But, dang. But, yeah.
Right, Mike. Nice. You know, sometimes we got to give the people a little bit of everything. What's going on? It's been a busy week for me, but one thing that's really caught my attention throughout this week is Jimmy Kimmel. Mm-hmm. So Jimmy Kimmel on the news. You naughty head. Mike don't want to start the conversation.
He don't want to say shit.
Dude, Mike started every single convo.
You want to switch spots, bro? I'll hop in there and start talking shit for you.
Mike started every... I'll introduce
go
the
ahead,
topic,
go ahead,
man.
Go ahead, bro. I'm going to get canceled, bro. I see what happened to Jimmy.
Bro said, Donnie T is
Mike
watching.
Chat his mouth. All right, I get it. I'll start. So, yeah, one thing that I saw this week, I mean, everyone's aware of this, man. So, Jimmy Kimmel, we all know what he does, his late night show that's been on for many, many years. I was in high school, or probably even earlier than that. Was benched, suspended, canceled, or however you want to say it, indefinitely, due to the fact of a monologue he had on Donald Trump and the late Charlie Kirk. If you watch the monologue, it wasn't nothing crazy. He was pretty much making a joke about how Trump really was mourning of Charlie Kirk. If you guys see the clip, a reporter asked Donald Trump something about Charlie Kirk. He said, yeah, really sad, kind of dismissed it, and wanted to talk about the White House construction or anything like that was happening. So obviously pretty funny, and Jimmy Kimmel just mentioned that about, you know, talking about Trump, who Jimmy Kimmel has, we all know, has attacked for years. And that's what a lot of late night hosts do when it comes to presidents. They attack the presidents when they do something silly. It's been going on for all I know. When I think about late night, I think about, or SNL, mm-hmm. I think about them making fun of, you know, the judicial system, what's going on. And he got canceled, and it's crazy, bro. It's really nuts to think that Trump is really behind this. We know Trump's behind this. He's very happy. He's happy for it. And suspending an episode, this, and now, you know, you bring up, what about the First Amendment? And what's are people not allowed to speak their mind? Can Mike bring up a topic like this now on Double N? Like, there's so many factors when it comes to this. So, just like early thoughts on this week's
episode. Yeah. Something that you just said for sure that, you know, got my attention. This has been going on for years. Late night show, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, whoever, all these dudes, The Daily Show, SNL, they always talk mess about, you know, government and politics and the presidents a lot of times. SNL always has an actor dressing up as, you know, Biden or Trump or Bush or Obama. Like, that's what they do. And it's crazy how, in this instance, you know, Jimmy Kimmel has this monologue, and he just essentially is talking about interesting way for Donald Trump, President Donald Trump, to mourn the loss of, you know, his friend. And they showed the clip. You know, Jimmy Kimmel wasn't just talking out of his ass. They showed the clip. Reporter asked Trump, you know, how do you feel about the passing of Kirk? And he said, are you good or something like that? And Trump literally goes, yeah, I'm good. But we're having some construction over here at the ballroom, and I'm really excited. So, yeah, he kind of dismissed the question, didn't really acknowledge, you know, Kirk or mourning and whatnot. And Jimmy Kimmel literally said, you know, interesting way for President to be mourning his friend. That's what it seemed like to me, what it was like to everybody watching. And a couple of days later, you know, you see all over news and whatnot, Jimmy Kimmel show suspended, indefinitely canceled, however you want to phrase it. And yet, why hasn't SNL ever been canceled or shut down? Why hasn't, you know, The Daily Show ever been shut down? Like, but this stuff has continuously happened. But with Jimmy Kimmel obviously being one to, you know, come at Trump for various things that he's done or said over the years, probably pisses Trump off. And people in Trump's corner pisses them off. And you definitely have to believe that, obviously, Donald Trump, he's the president, he got the power to say, see that show over there? Cut it. It's done. And what can you do if that's coming straight from the president and the people on his side of things? So it's tough. With Jimmy Kimmel, he's gotten a lot of support. A lot of celebrities have come out. And I've seen, you know, Channing Tatum. I've seen Ben Stiller. I've seen a lot of people come out like, nah, this is kind of bullshit that you cut Jimmy Kimmel off the air. And freedom of speech and whatnot, like, it's kind of wild to think about.
If you look at Jimmy Fallon's response too, if you guys haven't seen it, it's really funny. He's talks about, hey man, you know what, we're gonna say whatever we want on this show and we're gonna let Trump know how it is. And so he starts attacking Trump, but you can't hear it, and over it gets censored by saying nice things about Trump. This map is pretty funny on that.
That's hilarious.
But so if you haven't seen that, definitely check that out. But one thing that I hate about this, obviously, yes, the First Amendment is getting attacked, and that's what everyone's going to be talking about. But when you cancel, like, Jimmy Kimmel's going to be fine, right? This guy makes a lot of money. Yeah. He's. I don't feel as sorry for him. What I feel sorry for, and people don't think about this, is everyone else who works on that show.
Bingo.
Like, that, they're regular people like you and I who work the producers, yeah. work the show, the makeup artists, yep. all these people. There's hundreds and hundreds of people that are behind the scenes of a Jimmy Kimmel live show, and they all don't work now, making regular salaries that are not working at this moment. And that's... those are the lies that you're messing up, Trump, or people behind the scenes. These are the people that are being affected by this. Jimmy Kimmel's going to be good, bro. Mm-hmm. All the celebrities got his back. He can make a podcast right now and be chilling.
Yeah.
He can get on another episode right now and be chilling. They're trying to force him to apologize. He's like, after that, I'm not going to apologize. Apologize for what? And as he should. But now he's got his whole people, his whole circle, his hurt. What's that Mexican dude that's always on his show? He's not working.
I don't know, like, his name. I was going to think of something, but I don't know.
Hey, don't do it. Yeah,
I didn't know his
it.
Name.
I think it's like Garamo or something like that. Excuse me if I was... Why you laughing, bro? I'm trying to be serious.
Because I was trying to figure out his name. You threw something out there. I know you're talking about.
Yeah, but like, I'm just thinking about everybody who's a part of the show that gets affected, that not a lot of people are really thinking about. That's what sucks about this whole situation, in my opinion.
Yeah, I saw a clip, you know, this morning before we record this episode, and they got the trucks and whatnot going into, like, his set or the studio, and they're clearing it out, bringing out the furniture and bringing out all the stuff from the set. They're clearing it out.
That's crazy.
And it's just like everything you're saying, you know, the people that work there behind the scenes who are not making the hundreds of thousands and millions or whatever that Kimmel's making, they're done. That was their job. That was what they woke up to, you know, feed them themselves and their families and take care of their livelihood. They was getting from that show. They wasn't getting the money Jimmy Kimmel was getting, but they was getting what they could get from that show to take care of their livelihood. And Trump just brought an end to that, you know, and shut that down. And it's tough. It's tough for them people losing their jobs over this. And you got people, you know, Jimmy Fallon trying to make a joke out of it and whatnot, but it's like, people can't really say what you want without the fear of getting shut down now, because Trump or administration or whoever else is gonna, because obviously they're gonna say, well, the network shut it down for the comments, but who was telling the network to shut it down? Like, come on now. It's tough to see. So you want to believe that people in the media and have these platforms can have the space to kind of talk freely. Obviously, yes, you don't want to cross the line and say anything necessarily negative or, you know, disrespectful or anything like that. There's definitely a line that you don't want to cross. And from all accounts, from what you know, seeing the clip of Jimmy Kimmel and his monologue, I don't think the line was crossed. But, you know, people have a difference of opinions. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that he lost his show. But like you said, more importantly, it's unfortunate that the people around him working all the time around the clock to make that show what it is lost their jobs as well.
Yeah, it sucks. I think one thing, though, that's going to backfire on Trump and everyone who thinks, oh, shutting Jimmy Kimmel's show down is going to make a message. All it's going to do is have people fight back even more and really speak up on what they want to do. Like, one thing about Americans, they don't like their amendments being messed with. You feel me, Tex? They don't like their amendments being messed with.
What they called?
Americans. One thing about Americans, they don't like their amendment being messed with. And I think that you're going to start to see a big revolt. And you've already started to see with the celebrity back up and everything like that. So that's my take on it. All right. So we got it on the same mic. What up, Tex?
I had to do a quick substitution.
We're going to end this show off right, man. Mike kind of brought it up earlier to start off the show. Demon Slayer is out. It's currently the biggest anime movie of all time. Tex, you are our in-home anime analyst. You know what I'm saying? Make sure you catch Tex on Twitch. Where you at?
Yes,
you
sir. I'll be streaming on Twitch every Sunday. Every Sunday. Come check me out.
So make sure you check that out. But he is our in-house anime analyst. So, Tex, without further ado, the people want to know, what are your thoughts on Demon Slayer?
So, first of all, I love the movie. It was fantastic. Animation, great. Dialogue, great. I watched it in dub. I didn't want to watch it in sub. I didn't want to sit there and have to read the words while I was watching too, because there's a lot going on in that movie. There's a lot going on, and I didn't want to activate the Mangekyo Sharingan. I had to put that on the reserve. You know what I'm saying? So I went, watched it in dub with my lady. Fantastic movie. I loved it. I got my own minor opinions about it. I don't like that I had to wait 5 years for it to come out. That's besides the point. You know what I mean? I'm a manga reader, so, you know, I read all of this 5 years, you know, maybe like 6 years ago at this point, because I'm pretty sure I digress. Anyways, I really went there for two things. I went there to see Zenitsu transform and reawaken himself to become the man he needed to be. And I went there for Akaza's backstory.
Oh, you went there for that
backstory. For those two things, yeah, man. Because when I read the manga and I read Zenitsu's fight, tears. Straight tears.
No, that's
could hold it back.
See, I don't watch the manga, so watching it live, bro.
Yeah, like when I was reading it, like at chapter dropping weekly and everything like that, I was on the edge of my seat every week. Like, yo. And if I'm not mistaken, like, so in the movie, it literally shows Akaza's entire backstory.
Yeah.
But in the manga, dude has no head. He's walking Giyu down. Tanjiro's knocked out behind him. And all of a sudden, Ghost Arm grabs him. End of chapter. I said, oh, hell nah. So just
to see
seeing everything put together, yeah.
Yo, when his head got knocked out and he started moving, bro, and then he picked up his head and put it back, I was tight. I said, nah, I'm all set.
Brother,
I'm all set.
Brother, I said,
So I'm like, when is this movie gonna end?
Yeah.
He put his head back. I said, no way, bro.
That's how one of the chapters end too, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
He literally Tanjiro decapitates him, and we're like, oh yeah, it's done. Bro goes boop. I said,
I'm like, you can't do that.
What?
Showed us every episode they can't do that. Why is he doing that?
Bro, he's cut different.
No, he's cut different.
Cut
I see what
different.
You did there. I see what you did there.
Cut different. You know what I'm saying, brother? But Akaza's backstory was just beautiful. And every...
It was well done. Long, but well done.
Long, but well done. The entire scene where he gets rescued, you didn't know this from before, but if you didn't know this when you was watching it, the guy who voices the master who saves Akaza when he's a human, the master of the Soryu fighting style, is voiced by Channing Tatum.
I didn't know. I had no idea.
So it was amazing to watch. I love the movie. I give it an 8 out of 10, only because I had to wait 5 years. Also because, you know, none of that shit is actually real when they're swinging around all that fire and lightning and all that shit. That's all just a visual effect and stuff like that. That is always going to piss me off. It is always going to piss me off about Demon Slayer. It does look good, but it's not real.
What do you want it to be?
I want there to actually be fire. There's no fire. Look, the demons got ice. Demons got powers.
They did.
We just breathing out here.
Yo, that scene when the Hiroshima was goblinish.
Bro.
That might be the coldest scene of the movie.
Bro, it's not. You're not even ready.
You don't think that was cold?
Nah. It was sad. It was sad.
Bro.
Watching him break her back, and then he dodged. And, you know, I had to go read the manga again to go see that fight specifically after we left the movie, because I thought Shorty was just saying, fuck this nigga. Because if you notice, right before she gets swallowed, she does something with her hand, and it looks like a middle finger.
Right.
But she gives her subordinate like a command.
Yeah, to do something.
Basically, he says it to her. He's like, whatever she did with her finger made you understand that you shouldn't just be jumping a gun against me. And yeah, but
that scene, boy. Yeah, that's what I went to the movie for. Like, that's the cold shit I love about Demon Slayer. And to see that in the movie, like, she gave it her all, bro. And it didn't mean anything. Nothing. This dude said, poison.
Bro was pinned against the wall on the ceiling. He was pinned against the ceiling.
He was getting fucked up.
Drenched. It totally. He was on the brink of death. But, you know, he wasn't. He said, that shit went away. He shot down ice, picked Shorty up, and said, come here. That was beautiful.
And she was fighting for her sister, bro. It didn't even mean nothing.
That's
crazy. You know, that's so...
Didn't mean a damn thing. And it was so sad, because she said it. She was like, could I have been strong enough if I was just bigger? I can't wait for y'all to see how that fight actually ends. Like, I can't wait. Because reading that shit, bro...
So how long is it till the next movie, you think? 2 years?
The next movie, I think they said something about 2026. I think they already said something about it.
So that's already in production.
Yeah, but I'm not... I think they're going to have three movies in total.
That's what I heard. Right?
Yeah, but I have to say, personally, I'm not happy with the way anime is marketing their content at the moment. And it all really started because of Attack on Titan. Attack on Titan decided to start dropping fucking movies to finish the story, and
you're not a fan of that because the
waiting. It's not just the waiting; it's the dragging it out. Because
is it a money grab?
I think personally, it is. Like, literally, I think that's really what it is. Like, the market for anime is understanding, like, oh, this is a lot bigger than it really than we really thought about. Mm-hmm. So, like, production studios, just like merch in general, like everything like that is rolling out in
But what it's doing is it's getting, I'm a casual anime fan, as you know. So it's getting casual anime fans to go to the movies, and like JJK is coming out with a movie, right? I'm gonna go see it. I'm not a big JJK fan, but because it's going to the movie theater. So it's getting people like me, the casuals, to go to movie, and they're seeing that and they're like, all right, let's just keep. You think that's what it is?
I know that's what it is. And it's like, it's really the money grab. Like, keeping it in the movie theaters for only like a week, because that's typically what they do.
Yeah.
They only leave it there for like a week. After a week, they take that shit out, and you gotta wait 2, 3, 4 months to see it on Crunchyroll or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's like, and even then, like, If you don't pay for Crunchyroll, you can watch the most recent episodes for free. Okay. But I think it's only like the first or like the last couple of episodes. You can't go back or anything like that. And all of the movies that they have on their platform, you have to pay. So you have to get a subscription anyway. So it's just another money grab. And, hey man, it's just the way the world works, I guess, at this point. But I think, personally, I only want two more movies, max.
Of Demon Slayer? Yeah, two more. I think that's what they said. There would be those two
more. And I don't even think they need to. I think they could just do one.
But, so that's what my last question for you. Since you know how it wraps up, will it take two more movies to wrap this up?
Definitely. By the way, they're pacing it.
Because
I think it might.
They're nowhere close. It seems like.
No. They're like treading toward there, but there are a couple other fights within the ending of the story that are longer than the Akaza fight.
Okay, so we got some. So you think they're gonna pace it up a little more now?
I think they're gonna slow it down.
Really?
Yeah, because I think. So you saw three fights in this one. I wouldn't be surprised if you only see two in the next one.
Okay. Damn. With who? Can you give us that?
I don't remember all their names. I read it 5 years ago, and I don't really watch the anime like that. My girl's heavy attention. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure the next two people who are going to fight are the two sets of the other Hashiras who are running around. The snake dude and the girl with the pink hair.
Yeah, they were just there for comedy relief. They gotta get some action.
Shorty running around with the heart sword turned into a heart. I said, yeah, this is comedy. But I think they fight next, and then it's either the dude with the white hair who fights somebody by himself, or the blind dude and the...
Okay, man, I'm looking forward to a whole. If you got me hyped, saying it might come in 2026. Not trying to wait so many years for this to wrap up.
But it's disgusting, bro. It's disgusting.
You give it an 8 out of 10. I give it a 9 out of 10. I just think the backstories were a tad long for me, maybe because I am a cash. I don't know, but I enjoyed it. It brought out Mike. Mike went to go see the movie.
Mike didn't really watch that movie. Mike watched them niggas fall in. And then he watched the nigga put his head back on, pass back out again.
So the Falcon and the birds flying around looking for the people. We gotta find them.
Motherfucker was gone.
Yeah, that was cool, man. I loved how it just came. The movie started right where it ended off, with the people them falling into the house. Ah, love that movie, man. I will rewatch it again for sure.
Definitely.
Texas, bro. It's another episode of Double M Live. We had Mike Nice. We had Tex. I am your boy, DJ Mies. This is Double M Live, episode 2, season 7, Double M. We to the moon.